you have to overpay for that appreciation, it's really not worth it, because, you know, by coming in with a lot of cash to just, you know, get a little bit of cash flow, and, you know, you might get a huge swing on the appreciation, but because you're overpaying, sometimes markets that are a lot less obvious actually are the better investment.
Welcome to the Multifamily Cashflow Addicts Podcast, where you'll learn all the strategies to build passive income one door at a time through multifamily real estate investing. You'll hear from experts in their respected fields and from your real estate investing hosts, Marco and Dan, who have successfully completed dozens of fix and flips and apartment deals. And now, your hosts, Marco Canonico and Daniele DiCerbo.
Hey guys, welcome to the Multifamily Cashflow Addicts Podcast. I'm your co-host, Dan.
And I'm your co-host, Marco. This is episode 3.
And today we're going to be talking about, you know, how we analyze a potential submarket for a multifamily property. So pretty exciting topic for us today.
Yeah, for sure. Analyzing deals is something that I actually enjoy doing. And you enjoy it too, right, Dan?
Oh, for sure. I mean, we get to kind of like list off some, you know, some key factors that we kind of, you know, it allows us to kind of peel back the layers of, you know, what goes into really analyzing these markets. You know, to know that we're in, you know, we're buying in the right market, and you know, obviously the market supports, you know, our deal moving forward.
And analyzing markets is incredibly important. I mean, we've talked so much about in past podcasts about the importance of cash flow and how we're really focused on cash flow. But I mean, why would we just get cash flow when we can get cash flow and appreciation? A good rental property does do both. I think cash flow is incredibly important because while we sit and wait, we can, you know, catch that huge appreciation swing. You know, and that's why we're really focused on location when we're buying these properties. Still focused on cash flow for sure, but this podcast is going to be mainly focused on how we stay safe when we're buying these properties, and then how do we take advantage of huge appreciation swings that are natural in the marketplace.
Yeah, and so, you know, to Marco's point, you know, keep in mind that the market doesn't have to be booming in order for it to be a fit, you know, market to purchase a deal. It comes down to, you know, what you're looking for. So obviously you're looking for both. You're looking for cash flow, you're looking for appreciation. And obviously, a booming market will pose a seemingly stronger opportunity for appreciation down the road. You know, but you generally have to pay more for them, which brings down, you know, your cash on cash return.
Yeah, Dan, that's a really good point, because there are markets that everybody knows are going to be booming. And what that does is it draws lots of investors to them. And when you have to overpay for that appreciation, it's really not worth it, because, you know, by coming in with a lot of cash to just, you know, get a little bit of cash flow, and, you know, you might get a huge swing on the appreciation, but because you're overpaying, sometimes markets that are a lot less obvious actually are the better investment.
Yeah, and a cool quote that, you know, we kind of really were drawn by was the Grant Cardone quote. This is obviously paraphrased, not verbatim, but, you know, we get paid each month through cash flow to wait for the value to appreciate. You know, so picking a strong market is very important, because if you find a market that, you know, can give you that strong return and that cash flow on a monthly basis, it kind of pays you, you know, to stay in that market and wait, you know, for the value to appreciate. So eventually you'll kind of achieve both goals, but cash flow, you know, pays you to stay there longer, you know, to be able to reach, you know, those long-term, you know, return appreciation goals. Yeah, I mean, so Marco and I have, you know, kind of focused on 6 main factors that we use to, you know, to analyze a market. So the first one, actually, Marco, you want to take the first one and then I'll...
Yeah, sure. I'll start this off. Yeah, so I mean, there's 6 things that we're looking at basically when analyzing a market. And the biggest one, I think probably the most important one and the most obvious one, is population growth. So essentially we're looking, you know, in the past couple of years and seeing what's actually happening in this specific market. And we like to buy sometimes in, you know, we don't always buy in big major cities. Sometimes we're buying in small towns and things of that sort. And we want to see that over time that in that specific area, people are coming there. And just the simple laws of supply and demand will draw, you know, higher rents and will increase the prices. So definitely a big factor when we're determining, you know, if we want to invest in a market. We'll look at year over year changes, see where the trends are moving. And we want to also know what factors are driving that change. And we'll dive deeper into that kind of stuff and see, you know, what's really the reason, right? Like what's happening specifically in that area that's drawing people in. And we, sometimes we'll even look, you know, it's not just year over year, like it's, you know, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. We want to see over the scope of,
Your 2000, 2010, kind of seeing that kind
of growth. We want to see, from that time period, you know, what's actually happened in this market. And that kind of gives us a good idea of whether it's trending upwards, which obviously is a good sign because we can just extrapolate from there and see that, you know, when we purchase, we're going to have more and more people coming to this small town.
For sure. And I think the second one that we look at is if it's a landlord-friendly market. So basically what we're saying is that, you know, some markets are more tenant-friendly and some are more landlord-friendly. So we try to focus more on landlord-friendly markets in order to more confidently execute on our business plan. So obviously there's certain, you know, every state, you know, every city has different legislations. And obviously some state legislations benefit one side more than the other. So an example of how, you know, a landlord-friendly state would operate would be, you know, the eviction process would be more favorable. Yeah, favorable for, you know, for the landlord, you know, tenant rights, rent control, right? So there's obviously, if you're in a more tenant-friendly market, then obviously there's more caps on how the landlord can raise rents, you know, how fast he can raise rents. So he's kind of capped off.
More risk as well.
More risk as well, for sure. Obviously, registrations and licenses, so a lot of legalities that have to be met. You know, some examples of some more landlord-friendly states would be Arizona, Florida, Texas, Colorado, Indiana. And just a quick example off top of maybe a more tenant-friendly state would be California. As we know, California is, you know, very liberal. And you don't want to get caught in a situation where, you know, your tenant has all the rights. You know, in some situations, a tenant can, you know, it might take them 12 months for you to actually physically evict them from the property. So as a landlord, that's going to, you know, obviously put a dent in your pockets. So just kind of being aware of, you know, where you're buying these properties and making sure that you're buying it in a market that, you know, is more favorable to you as a landlord. That's going to obviously make your job easier in you know, managing these properties.
Yeah, actually, that's another reason why investing in the United States is good. In Canada, we have a lot of tenant-friendly laws, and Toronto is a nightmare for that kind of thing. Ontario is just very slow with the whole eviction process. It can take actually over a year where your tenant's not paying anything and legally they're allowed to be in the unit and there's just nothing you can do. Right, so yeah. just something to keep in mind when you're purchasing, for sure. Okay, next we have the next one is employment growth. So, you know, by the way, if anybody wants to learn a little bit more about how they can invest passively into one of our upcoming multifamily deals, all you got to do is text apartments to 813-213-0427 if you live in the United States. If you live in Canada, just text apartments to 647-691-1043.
Yeah, and if you text those numbers, there's some pretty cool links with some cool resources that you'll get automated through text. So just, text apartments, doesn't matter if it's uppercase or lowercase, and you'll get some pretty cool resources, and yeah,
it's good stuff. All right, employment growth, let's keep going here. So employment growth is another really big one, and if you understand and you're monitoring the employment rates and demographics, it allows you to basically examine the social classes a little bit better, and you can really understand if the potential renters have the ability to afford market rents. And you can see where things are trending. So in a place where jobs are starting to diminish, that's a bad sign. Because if people can't afford to pay their rent, then you know, you don't want to be a landlord of that building. And that's a pretty obvious one. So we're definitely looking at employment growth and seeing, you know, are jobs opening up in that market? Are they decreasing? And that allows us to definitely, you know, get a good idea of what the stability in terms of the job market is. In that market. So we're always analyzing that one for sure. That's a big one.
Yeah, and there's obviously a lot of similarities between how we analyze population growth and employment growth. You know, very similar in terms of the durations of kind of looking at things from, you know, from 2000, you know, in 2010 onwards.
And most markets, like when you have employment growth, it leads to population growth. So they do kind of go hand in hand. It's a little bit more unlikely to see that one would be increasing while the other would be decreasing. A lot of people do flock to towns and cities where the opportunities are, because you know, people got to eat. People need to put food on the table, so they're going where the jobs are. So those two do go hand in hand.
And you're obviously seeing a lot of Amazon investing into all these different you know, big infrastructures into all these hubs, and they're providing, you know, hundreds of thousands of jobs throughout the nation. So, you know, being where, you know, Amazon's building out their facilities is obviously a strong driver of, you know, employment growth and stability for especially, you know, blue collar,
sure.
you know, employment classes and all that, right? So
yeah, some investors actually, they don't even look at anything else. They're just following Amazon.
Where Amazon's going.
Wherever yeah. Amazon's going, they're going. That's enough for them. They don't care about any other stat. They don't care about even cap rates. They just, if Amazon's there, they feel safe. They're going to make money, and that's it.
Yeah, like in what was it, a few months back in New York, Amazon was pretty much committed to building a massive hub there in the downtown core of New York, and you know, ensuing to the date when it was going to be finalized for Amazon to kind of build, or sorry, you know, agree on having a contract to build out their facility. The market was just like slowly creeping up, and you know, all the investors and you know, landlords were getting excited about the potential growth, you know, Amazon coming in. And once that happened, the market kind of hit a stale patch when they failed to lock in a facility there. So that's obviously huge.
Yeah, for sure.
It's also important to understand what stage of the market cycle we're in. So the market generally moves in four phases. And, you know, Marco and I actually touched on this on our first intro episode. We, you know, went briefly into it in terms of like the four core phases, but we didn't, you know, dive very, you know, deep into it. And we're probably not going to do that again today. We're going to actually save a full episode for that. But just in general, we have four phases. We have expansion, hyper supply, recession, and recovery. So again, I'm not going to highlight exactly what the criteria is for each phase, but each phase has three stages to it. So until it moves to the next phase, we need to understand which phase, you know, our selected market is in. And, you know, understanding what market, what phase our market's in, it allows us to highlight and really understand, you know, what are the proper, you know, short-term or long-term exit strategies we have to maximize our returns. So obviously on top of all the, you know, statistics of demographics and, you know, growth and where things are moving, we also want to know, you know, in a whole, what, you know, what we can classify that cycle of where it is. And when we understand that, and we see all the, you know, basically the symptoms of what that phase is, then we understand, you know, what our exits are and how long we're potentially going to hold these properties. Because, you know, some of these, you know, some of these deals might be, you know, 10, 20 year holds, and some of them might be, you know, just a five, you know, 4, 5, 6 year reposition and flip, and then find the next emerging market. And there's, you know, 20 to 30 markets maybe at one time that are kind of, you know, in that emerging phase. So that's, you know, a very strong factor to, you know, to keep an eye on and monitor and see where things are moving.
And another one of the six key factors that we look at when we're analyzing these markets is diversification. Well, diversified markets. Essentially what we're looking at is we want to know that in that specific market, there's multiple drivers that are making people, you know, making the market thrive. So a big example would be like of a big mistake to purchase in would be something like Detroit that was heavily dependent on one industry, which was the automotive industry. And we all know what happened there. So, you know, one small change, one decision of pulling out, and, you know, there's a market collapse. And a lot of people did lose money landlording in a market like Detroit. So diversification of industries and the types of jobs provide more stabilization and growth in any particular market. Now, I do, although that is very important, because there are, you know, there are some cities that are heavily driven by one key force or key industry. But I do want to make clear that sometimes, like, for example, Florida. I love Florida as an investment. I think that, you know, it's got a lot of the other, it's got a lot of the other 5 points that we are analyzing, that we're looking at. But a big thing for Florida is the weather and the climate. And people love
that lifestyle, yeah.
Yeah, people love that. Now, I don't see, you know, I don't see the sun leaving Florida.
Yeah, I think it's going to stay there for the next 10 years. Yeah,
I think there's a good chance. I think there's a good chance the sun and the heat will be something that will stay with Florida. So, although the like the tourist market or the vacation market is something that you know, like that Florida thrives heavily on, I wouldn't really be too worried in that case. But there are some major cities that are dependent on, you know, for whatever reason, one particular industry. And you just putting all your eggs in one basket like that is something that's very risky. And we definitely just want to make sure that whatever industry or whatever city, rather, we're looking to invest in or whatever town, it's not dependent on one power plant or one factory or one sole driver. We want to see that there's multiple drivers in that market that are booming or that are making the economy stable, so that if in the event that one were to pull out, it's still a thriving market and you're not going to see an epic collapse, kind of like what we saw in Detroit with the automotive industry pulling out.
Yeah, maybe just one example that I can add, you know, that we've kind of, you know, personally kind of touched now is, you know, we were looking at a deal in a submarket that was, you know, very reliant on a military base. And that's maybe an example of, you know, maybe the anomaly of where one industry can like drive a community, but there's more stability obviously in like having a military base because it's, you know, typically you're going to be there for a long time. And
yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's important to look at what that industry is, if it is one. But generally speaking, just by having multiple, you know, even, you gotta always think outside, you gotta think beyond that industry. You gotta really just dive deep into the future outlook and what potentially could happen in any market. So yeah, it's just something that we're definitely taking note of when we're looking at these markets, because that is something that could totally kill a market. Like yeah. Almost overnight. It's something that can drastically impact your investment. So we definitely want to make sure that we're at least keeping an eye on what's happening in terms of the industries that are fueling that economy.
For sure, yeah. That diversity is going to cover a downside in, you know, in the event that you know, something like GM kind of pulls out and, you know, you have a replication of, you know, what already occurred.
Yeah, and Detroit really still hasn't recovered from that. Actually, just briefly touching on Detroit, I think that that's actually a great place. You know, they always say buy low, sell high.
It's very low right now.
very low right now. Yeah. Now the thing is, I know a lot of foreign investors have purchased up a lot of property there. Yeah. I haven't really heard of anything.
A lot of Asian money.
Yeah, I haven't heard of anything really turning around as of yet. But this is just something to take note of. I think at some point there's just too much infrastructure in that market for it to completely get wiped, and there's going to be a time where Detroit thrives again, and everybody knows it. I think we're just waiting for that first sign of life where it's, you know, on the recovery, and then I think everybody's going to start jumping in. So if you have your eyes on Detroit, I would still keep it there. You know, I think it's a market that's going to turn around eventually, but we're all sitting and waiting. I mean, I've been hearing this for the last couple of years, and we're all still waiting. But the day it happens, I think it's just going to be like wildfire. Everybody's going to jump in. And
oh, yeah. It's really at its bottom. Sure, yeah.
But every single person is interested in it. So Detroit's a very interesting market right now.
And I guess the last, you know, and the sixth factor that we look at in selecting a market is supply and demand. You know, so we monitor the supply of local units carefully to ensure, you know, it won't spike the vacancy rates and negatively impact rents. We also kind of monitor, you know, permits that were pulled in the city. So we look, you know, before I dive into the whole like permits and construction and building and how that kind of affects supply and demand. And it's also kind of very important to dive in and understand like what the vacancy, you know, the normalized vacancies and, you know, occupancies are in that submarket. And, you know, if you're obviously at a very low vacancy and a high occupancy in your deal submarket, that obviously tells you that there's, you know, very high demand, you know, for units. Which also tells builders that there's a demand to build. And also maybe that could be driven by, back to kind of some of the other factors that we touched on, you know, there could be new, you know, new industries that kind of emerge in the area. So there's job growth, lifestyle, like Marco mentioned in Florida, that's driving people there. And maybe the demand for units hasn't caught up with that. Or maybe it's just that, you know, landlords aren't, you know, charging what they should be charging. And, you know, market rents aren't moving up with where they should be. So either or, that's very important to kind of monitor. And obviously, you know, kind of tying that back to, you know, the low vacancies and showing builders that there's, you know, room and demand to build. The way we kind of dig into that is understand how many permits have been pulled in the last, you know, 12 to 24 months and all that, 36 months as well. And that kind of tells us a forecast of, you know, how builders look at the market and, you know, how, again, just supply and demand, what's out there. And that kind of tells us, you know, gives us a good indication of how fast, you know, rental growth will happen, you know, on a year over year basis. And yeah, I think that's pretty much how we look at that.
Yeah. And just one quick point about these six factors. Most of them are designed to help us locate markets where we can anticipate appreciation. We can anticipate a huge swing in value, which has nothing to do with us. You know, we're just buying a building, we're sitting and waiting, we're cash flowing. If we're going to cash flow anyways, I think we got to hopefully pick, like, we want to pick something that's going to go up in value as well.
For sure.
Why not? I mean, you're going to cash flow regardless, because that's what we're doing. We're cash flowing. And
it's number
we
one,
can yeah. choose where we want to sit. So we want to sit in the hottest spot. And these are the indicators that are going to help us do that. But there are also indicators that are going to help us mitigate our risk. And that's kind of where we talk about diversified markets. That's where we talk about landlord-friendly markets. That's more along the lines of risk assessment. Like we want to say, you know, why would we purchase in a market where, you know, we're going to see tenants giving us issues, or we're going to see a risk of one industry ruining it for us. So most of them are indicators of where is the appreciation going to happen in the next 5 to 10 years, or, you know, however long we plan on holding the building. But there is also an element of keeping us safe.
We're obviously not psychics. And, you know, like you said, we're just trying to do, you know, our best at understanding, you know, what our downside is, and trying to be as calculated as we can so that we, you know, we make, you know, there's obviously a lot of money going into these deals, and we're not sitting there for a 6-12 month, you know, reposition and flip. Like, we're stuck in these deals for potentially 3, 5, 7, 10 years. So understanding where things are moving forward, or having the best idea of where things are moving without actually knowing it, is going to put you in the best opportunity to succeed moving forward.
But even if somehow we do pick a bad market, there's always cash flow.
Cash flow, baby.
That's why cash flow is the most important thing when you're buying these things. But this is another element to bring to the investment to get your ROI at the end of the whole, you know, 7 month hold, or 7 year hold, or 10 year hold, at an absolute maximum. These are the strategies that we're doing. So I think that pretty much sums up everything.
Actually, Marco, let me add a few resources to where you guys can actually. So obviously, we gave you guys our, you know, 6 core factors that we look at to, you know, analyze these markets and vet them, and, you know, select markets and see if the market supports, you know, our deals. There's a few resources that we use. DataUSA.io, you know, there's NeighborhoodScout.com, Axiometrics.com, CoStar.com, RCapitalAnalytics.com. So these are basically all sites that you can use as, you know, references to find some of the information, you know, peel back the data, you know, along the lines with some of those factors that we gave you. But, you know, some of these sites are free and some of them are paid. For some preliminary information, there's more than enough resources there to get from the free resources. And obviously, if you want, you know, more micro detail and really want to peel back some of the information, then you're going to want to, you know, pay for some of these resources.
You know, Dan, everybody owes you a big thank you, because I almost just cut off the podcast there. So definitely some quality information there for you guys. There's actually another one here. It's alndata.com. Or IRR.com, another two websites that you can visit that have good quality information. Or even just simply type in Marcus and Millichap reports into Google, and you'll get some good quality information on forecasts and projections when analyzing multifamily apartments. Basically, everything we summed up with, those are the resources that you can use to access that stuff. Population growth, employment growth, landlord-friendly market, diversified market, know what stage in the market we are in. So market cycles and the simple laws of supply and demand.
For sure. So having that information is super important, super crucial. Understanding if the market can sustain the demand and growth and, you know, and market rents. And that's super key to keep an eye on. And yeah, check out some of those resources. There'll be a strong resource to kind of dive into some of the markets that you're maybe interested in, or some potential deals that you're looking in, and really see where things are moving, you know, moving forward. So I guess that's it for episode 3.
That's early. I don't know why I'm trying to get out of here early.
Yeah, we got to get back on the road here. It's getting dark.
And, all right, everybody. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next time.
All right. See you next week.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the Multifamily Cash Flow Addicts podcast. For more free podcasts, go to anchor.fm/cashflowaddicts. If you're interested in learning more about how you can passively invest into one of Marco and Dan's upcoming multifamily deals, text APARTMENTS to 813-213-0427 if you reside in the U.S., or text APARTMENTS to 647-691-1043 if you reside in Canada. You can also visit willowdaleequity.com to learn more. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.